Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 998. In politics, nothing happens by accident. Weaponized feminism and the hashtag MeToo movement. This is being recorded on February 27th of the year 2018. The first part of our title, In Politics, Nothing Happens by Accident, is part of a quote attributed to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. In politics, nothing happens by accident. If it happens, you can bet that it was planned that way. And we are going to be looking at, and I want to underscore this, weaponized feminism, not feminism, but weaponized feminism, and some aspects of the hashtag MeToo movement that have unfortunately escaped notice, obviously. These are political overtones of this in particular. We are going to be taking a look at the political destruction of Al Franken, formerly a Democratic U.S. Senator from Minnesota, and a very good one, I would add. And also, we are going to review the ousting of Representative John Conyers. He was one of the few congressional critics of the Azov Battalion and the reinstituted OUNB Nazi successor organizations in Ukraine. We're also going to take a look at the Harvey Weinstein scandal. I don't doubt at all that Weinstein was doing what he is alleged to have done. The casting couch, as it is known, is something of a, I guess you could say, a dishonorable tradition in Hollywood, and it certainly appears that Weinstein was an active practicer of that, and yet we're going to look at some aspects of that. Weinstein was a major Democratic fundraiser. Malia Obama, the daughter of former President Barack Obama, had interned with Weinstein in January of 2017, and the arguably the most high-profile accuser of Weinstein, an Italian woman named Ambra Battiana, also was the woman who helped to bring down Silvio Berlusconi, at least temporarily in Italy. The point being that this young woman gets around and has been involved in two high-profile political takedowns on both sides of the Atlantic. We are also going to be looking at a very disturbing aspect of what I have termed technocratic fascism in the takedown of Al Franken. The whole subject of sexuality in a political context is a touchy one, no pun intended, and I'm toying with the idea or contemplating the idea of doing a follow-up program, something of a fireside chat, to go into the whole concept of sexuality and politics. I'm not sure if I'm going to do it. It probably won't work even an hour devoted just to ruminating about some of the philosophical and sociological or psychosociological aspects of sexual politics and sexuality and politics is probably beyond the scope of the efforts that could be exerted here. I'm neither a psychotherapist nor a sociologist. Nonetheless, with the hashtag MeToo movement, and note the placement of this within our digital culture. When we get into the deep sixing of Al Franken. We're going to take a look at just how perilous that culture is and what can be done with the right technology. Something I want to mention simply in passing and to begin with, in our recent series about Hindutva fascism, for the record program, 988 through 992, we began with the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi. One of Gandhi's principles was that one should not mix politics and sexuality or sex. He felt that it would certainly destroy you politically and that it might destroy you sexually as well. He was so adamant about that that he felt that to properly manifest his satyagraha tactic or truth force tactic, celibacy, sexual renunciation, was essential to maintain the profound, rigorous personal discipline necessary to do that. I'm not sure I would necessarily recommend that, but there is a very good book that I mentioned in the context of, for the record, 988 and 989, called Gandhi's Truth by Eric Erickson. I recommend that. And we'll see. Maybe I will try to do a follow-up program, perhaps not. But I want to stress very carefully that I am not talking about feminism, but weaponized feminism. And we are looking at this in the context of fascist politics and some of the things that have been going on. Also front and center here is the concept of the four B's of American politics: bullets, bribes, bids, and blackmail. That is how things get done. As one Louisiana politician observed, something you don't ever want to do is get caught in bed with a live boy or a dead girl. And the four B's are fundamental here. So I'm going to plunge right in. And again, the concept here is weaponized feminism. I also should probably stress that I do not, and this is so pro forma, I don't hold a brief for sexual harassment or any other form of transgression. After almost 40 years on the air, I paid quite a price for what I do, and part of the price that I have paid is misanthropy. I care not for man, echoing Hamlet. I have a very, very, very low opinion of human nature. And people of power, or people with power and influence, generally leverage that power or influence for gain, be it financial or sexual. As I mentioned in connection with the Harvey Weinstein case, the casting couch is something of an old and dishonored tradition in Hollywood. I think that sort of serves as an introduction, but again, I have to stress what I am talking about here is not feminism, but weaponized feminism, and in the context of the four B's of American politics: bullets, bribes, bids, and blackmail. If you can't shoot them, if you can't blackmail them, or maybe in order to blackmail them, get some sort of compromising sexual dirt, or just do some good opposition research. There may be some of that dirt available. I should also probably note, by way of introductory remarks, that people's feelings, the reason why Gandhi, much of the foundation of the reason that Gandhi felt you should keep sex and politics separate, is that people's feelings about sexuality and their associations are among the most profound, among the most conflicted, among the most painful, and in many cases unconscious or preconscious. It is very easy for people to engage, and unconsciously so, in what psychologists call displacement or transference. I've heard many people talking about sexual politics, and it becomes clear at a certain point that the emotional animation that they are manifesting comes from painful experience, whether it's with a boyfriend or a girlfriend or an old boyfriend or an old girlfriend or a husband or a wife or an ex-husband or an ex-wife, or whether they have been sexually harassed by a coworker, by a supervisor, molested perhaps by the parent of the opposite sex or the same sex. Again, people's feelings about sexuality are often deeply conflicted, very painful, and in many cases unconscious or preconscious. And for that reason, when one taps into that very potent and past a point unstable arena of psychological sensation or manifestation, one is tapping into something very powerful indeed. But again, I am talking about not feminism, but weaponized feminism. And there could be no better introduction to what I mean by weaponized feminism than to read a portion of an op-ed column that appeared in The Guardian of December 10th of 2017. This is co-authored by Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, and actress Angelina Jolie, who was one of Harvey Weinstein's accusers. Why NATO must defend women's rights. And again, by the Secretary General of NATO and Angelina Jolie, the famous actress, sometime wife. Maybe still, I don't keep up with this stuff. The wife of Brad Pitt. And what they're talking about basically is NATO engaging in order to defend women's rights. NATO, of course, is a military organization, and I would be so bold as to suggest that a war-making institution is not an ideal vehicle for the realization of women's rights. This is not to say that all sorts of horrible sexual violence does take place in the context of war. That has always been the case. But I think if women are thinking that, yeah, NATO is a great vehicle for defending our rights, war is bad for women and children. It's bad for everyone. It is particularly bad for women and children. So again, from Why NATO Must Defend Women's Rights by Jens Stoltenberg and Angelina Jolie, skipping down. We believe that NATO has the responsibility and opportunity to be a leading protector of women's rights. In particular, we believe NATO can become the global military leader in how to prevent and respond to sexual violence in conflict, drawing on the strengths and capabilities of its member states and working with its many partner countries. NATO already deploys gender advisors to local communities in Kosovo. Well, this, I think, underscores just how fallacious or hypocritical, perhaps, turning to NATO to enforce women's rights. Kosovo was at one point part of the former Yugoslavia, and as we have talked about in past programs, drawing on work by Chris Hedges, when he was writing for the New York Times, many of the combatants fighting alongside NATO in Kosovo were the sons and grandsons, I should say, of various fascist fighting organizations and formations, including the 21st Waffen-SS or Skanderbeg Division, composed of Albanian Muslims. The beneficiary of NATO's efforts in Kosovo is Prime Minister Hashim, H-A-S-H-I-M, I've also seen it, E-M, Tachi, T-H-A-C-I. And this, I think, places the ruminations of Ms. Joly and Mr. Stoltenberg in context. This from the Inquisitor blog of November 20th of 2012. Kosovo PM Tachi owns a harem with female slaves, traffics drugs and organs, according to reports. This by Wolf, W-O-L-F-F, Bachner, B-A-C-H-N-E-R, reads in part, Kosovo's Prime Minister Hashim Tachi is facing a wide range of criminal allegations, including owning a harem with 52 female sex slaves, drug trafficking, and the sale of human organs. The Prime Minister has been accused of criminal activity in several major European news sources. Among them are Berlin-based Daily Der Tagesspiegel, The Guardian, and MENA. MENA, the Macedonian International News Agency, is the source of today's article about the suspected crimes of the controversial leader of Kosovo. According to the news agency, a Ukrainian woman escaped from Tachi's harem and revealed damning information about sex slavery in Kosovo. The woman claims 52 female sex slaves are forced to work night and day to service the Prime Minister and his rich friends in business and government. Apparently, this one got by Jen Stoltenberg and Angelina Jolie. Hashtag, physicians heal thyself. Another interesting thing to me, and we're going to review this from, for the record, is it 993? In any event, in a recent program, we spoke about the ouster of John Conyers. He fell victim to the hashtag MeToo movement, and John Conyers was one of the few congressional critics of the reinstitution of Nazi and fascist elements, the successor organizations to the OUNB in Ukraine. And specifically, Conyers was critical of the Nazi Azov Battalion. That is arguably the point military unit of the Ukrainian military, and they wear the swastika and the SS rune on their combat helmets. An article in the Huffington Post, a very revealing article from August 7th of 2015, this by Christopher Harrison, H-A-R-R-I-S-O-N, and it labels John Conyers in exemplary and very characteristic fashion, Putin's man in Congress. This is neo-McCarthyism and the new Cold War at its most vile. The Azov's spokesman, Roman Zvarych, Z-V-A-R-Y-C-H, told me that the battalion has a selective screening program that accepts only 50 out of almost 300 recruits each month. He says they have a thorough background check and reject members for various reasons, including having fascist leanings. Well, that is a flat-out lie by Roman Zvarych, and Christopher Harrison, I would note, was a State Department and Pentagon functionary under George W. Bush. Roman Zvarych was the personal secretary in the early 1980s to Yaroslav Stetsko, who became head of the OUNB after Stefan Bandera was assassinated, not by the KGB, but in all probability either by a BND and or CIA. Yaroslav Stetsko was the wartime head of the Nazi puppet government in Ukraine, and in that position implemented the Nazi ethnic cleansing against ethnic Jews, or against Jews, ethnic Russians, and Poles, and was responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. And Christopher Harrison here goes on to, he expounds on Representative Conyers, or former, now former Representative Conyers, as Putin's man in Congress. Representative Conyers played an important role in helping the Russian Nazi meme evolve from the stuff of conspiracy theorists, kooks, and fellow travelers into something the mainstream press happily prints. Representative Conyers took to the floor of the House to submit his amendment and label the unit the repulsive neo-Nazi Azov Battalion. Well, there is abundant evidence that it is exactly that. I would not use the term neo because they hearken back directly to the OUNB, the Allies of the Third Reich. Again, the neo-McCarthyite New Cold War, the vile, the extreme neo-McCarthyite and New Cold War painting or tainting of Representative Conyers here should not go unnoticed, nor should the manner in which Conyers was removed from office. Excerpting the New York Times of December 31st of 2017, an article by Kenneth P. Vogel. Partisans wielding money begin seeking to exploit harassment claims. Skipping down. In November, the Trump-backing social media agitator Mike Cernovich, C-E-R-N-O-V-I-C-H, offered to pay $10,000 for details of any congressional sexual harassment settlements and said on Twitter that he would cover the expenses of, quote, any victim of a congressman who wants to come forward to tell her story, unquote. Shortly before posting that offer, a source provided Mr. Cernovich with a copy of a sexual harassment settlement that led in December to the resignation of Representative John Conyers, Jr., Democrat of Michigan, until then the longest-serving member of the House. Skipping down. Mr. Cernovich and the far-right activist Charles C. Johnson, both of them, by the way, alt-right, and we're going to come back to both of them, along with Roger Stone in connection with the ousting of Al Franken. Mr. Cernovich and the far-right activist Charles C. Johnson had to back away from claims that they possessed a sexual harassment settlement that would bring down a leading Democratic senator when it became apparent that the document which targeted the Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York was a forgery. Skipping down. Boy, this is understatement here. Mr. Cernovich is an unlikely champion for sexual harassment victims, given his previous career as an anti-feminist blogger who cast doubt on date rape allegations and wrote posts with headlines like, "Misogyny Gets You Laid," unquote. He should go to work for Hashim Tachi. We are going to come back to that, come back to Mike Cernovich and Charles Johnson and Roger Stone in connection with Al Franken. What I want to note here is, again, the far-right, at one level, the far-right connections of this and the context in which it takes place. During the campaign, of course, Donald Trump, there was a tape of Donald Trump making all sorts of references to grabbing women by the P word and other things. There have been numerous allegations by various women of having been sexually harassed by Donald Trump. And, of course, Fox News was the focal point of a great many allegations. Apparently many of them substantive, that many of the female personalities on Fox News had been sexually harassed. Personally, I'm shocked to learn that there was gambling going on in this establishment. Certainly the working press is the working press, but although, again, I hold no brief for sexual harassment, I would not be surprised if a right-wing outfit like Fox News did wink at things of that kind. Speaking of Fox News, among the people who worked for Fox News was Leanne Tweeden, the accuser of Al Franken. The aforementioned longtime GOP dirty tricks champion Roger Stone foreshadowed the ousting of Al Franken, saying that it was his turn in the barrel. Leanne Tweeden was, again, a longtime commentator on Fox News. She also is a very statuesque woman who marketed her considerable physical charms in venues like Playboy and Maxim and other publications. I do not fault her for that. People have to eat and they have to keep a roof over their heads. And if one is endowed in the way that Leanne Tweeden is or was, working for outfits like Hooters or Playboy is certainly one of the avenues to successful remuneration. However, she has a generally right-wing political resume. She worked for Fox News for years. Various acquaintances have maintained that one of her close associates at KABC TV, or a radio rather, in L.A., is a big Trump backer. And the circumstances under which she came to tar Al Franken, frankly, I find suspicious. They were on a USO tour together some years back in 2008, and there was a picture of Al Franken, which is obviously not a serious picture of him pretending to grope Leanne Tweeden when she was ostensibly asleep. Some of the people who were there alleged that she was not asleep. And it obviously is tongue-in-cheek, no pun intended again. He's looking at the photographer with this look on his face and is quite obviously kidding around. One could argue with the taste and wisdom of that particular gesture. However, and when the written description for this program comes out, I posted several other pictures from that USO tour, including one of Leanne Tweeden herself goosing what appears to be a country and western performer on stage at the same USO tour. She's grabbing his butt, and I'm not accusing her of sexual harassment at all. It's quite obvious that this was not jocular. Again, the term tongue-in-cheek is perhaps not, well, maybe too appropriate, but this is not a serious sexual aggression act on the part of Leanne Tweeden. There also is another picture from that same USO tour of Al Franken on stage with a microphone holding up what appears to be either a very skimpy brassiere or perhaps a very skimpy pair of panties, which presumably belonged to Leanne Tweeden. And she's on stage there looking off to the side. Again, mugging. This is not a serious manifestation. It's all in jest. Bearing in mind, too, this is on a USO tour. When military personnel, when troops in a theater of war attend a USO show on their R&R time, they are not expecting to see a performance of Debussy string quartets, perhaps G-string quartets under the circumstances, but this is the general body or libidinous aesthetic of a USO tour. When one looks at the famous picture, by now famous or infamous picture of Al Franken appearing to grab the ostensibly sleeping Leanne Tweeden's breast. She's wearing a flak jacket, which is at the other end of the erotic political, erotic apparel spectrum from Victoria's Secret. He's obviously not serious. He's kidding around. And again, when Leanne Tweeden is grabbing that C&W performer's butt, she's not serious either. And when Al Franken and Leanne Tweeden are on stage and he's holding up a skimpy undergarment and she's mugging off to the side, this whole thing is lighthearted. It is not meant to be serious. And again, this is on the USO tour. 10 years later, this becomes the focal point of the ouster of a seated U.S. senator. And the fact that this happened at about the same time as some far more serious and substantive allegations surfaced against Republican GOP candidate Roy Moore in Alabama, and with the Republicans holding a two-seat advantage in the Senate, I find this more than a little suspicious. We're going to go into Roger Stone's for direct foreshadowing of the ouster of Al Franken in just a minute. One of the things that has not received much, has not received the discussion and the scrutiny that it deserves, is the extent to which the hashtag MeToo phenomenon has the, or manifests the possibilities for sexual McCarthyism. Joe McCarthy was notorious for holding up a sheaf of papers and saying he had in his hands proof of communist infiltration, of you name it, the State Department, the military, what have you. And he would not produce that, and when he was challenged, could not produce documentation of communist infiltration. When one takes the view that they have to believe the women, there is an aspect of, well, an amoral aspect to that that is actually in a way sexist in and of itself. Well, one certainly should not disbelieve the women, simply assuming that because a woman says something, it is automatically correct, really is almost like the old ditty of what are little boys made of? Frogs and snails and puppy dog tails. What are little girls made of? Sugar and spice and all things nice. Women are capable of evil. They're capable of being dishonest. Suppose, for example, that Eva Braun had been the Chancellor of Germany instead of Adolf Hitler, when she said the international Jewry is conspiring against Germany and we must take steps to do something about that. Well, if you take the view that hashtag believe women, well, we must believe Eva Braun when she says that because she is female. Or if she says the Poles have attacked our border station at Gliwice, so our armies are moving into Poland to protect our territorial integrity. The Nazi invasion of Poland began with a provocation that was codenamed Operation Canned Meat. There was a bogus incident staged at the German border with Poland at a place called Gliwice. The Poles had supposedly attacked a German facility there, and some concentration camp inmates were dressed in Polish military uniforms and killed, and some of their German guards were sacrificed as well, so that there were German casualties. It was called Operation Canned Meat when the Gestapo exercised it. Suppose, however, Eva Braun had been the German chancellor. Should we take the allegations of Polish or were we to have taken the allegations of Polish aggression at Gliwice at face value simply because Ewa Braun was female? That is the point. Martin Luther King, who, by the way, practiced very successfully the method espoused by Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King observed that we should judge a person not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I would supplement that by saying we should judge someone not by the configuration of their genitals, nor what they do with those genitals behind closed doors, but by the content of their character. There have been plenty of evil women throughout history, and plenty of evil gay men as well. The aforementioned Joe McCarthy was gay, as was his aide, Roy Cohn, who was the top lawyer for Donald Trump for many years and was the man who recruited Roger Stone to work for Donald Trump. J. Edgar Hoover was gay. His top aide, Clyde Tolson, was his lesbian lover. Carmel Offey, who ran the Office of Policy Coordination, the forerunner of the CIA's Directorate of Plans, was gay. And like Joe McCarthy and like Carmel Offey, persecuted gays during his Cold War career. And again, we don't hear about this. There have been plenty of other evil gay people. A lot of the people who were involved at the operational level of the assassination of JFK, the ironically named David Ferry, Clay Shaw, J. Edgar Hoover helped cover it up. Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby are credibly rumored to have been bisexual, and some accounts have them as sometime lovers. Again, there have been plenty of evil gay people. One should certainly not characterize anyone as being evil for being gay, nor harass nor persecute them in any size, shape, form, or manner. But just because they are gay doesn't mean they're good, just as someone should not belittle women or diminish women or harass them or persecute them because they are female. By the same token, just because they are female, that doesn't mean that they're sugar and spice and all things nice. And in particular, with Joe McCarthy's ghost now stalking the land and with a neo-McCarthyism becoming very directly manifest, we should not lose sight of what McCarthy did. It adds up. What McCarthy did sexually, it adds a brutally ironic level of meaning to his nickname, Tail Gunner Joe. We should note, too, that in America, the libel laws, the defamation laws, are very, very, very difficult for a public person to navigate. Slander or libel for a public figure in America is extremely difficult to prove, and it is extremely expensive. Third-party slander is impossible to litigate. And the hashtag MeToo phenomenon has had a lot of third-party slander. And the brutal similarity, to my way of thinking, between aspects, the weaponized aspects of the hashtag MeToo movement and the Salem witch trials should not go unmentioned. Castigating women or persecuting or killing women as being witches has a place in the struggles of women for equality that is beyond the scope of this discussion. But suffice it to say that hysterical charges against women in Salem and elsewhere of being witches resulted in those women being killed in horrible fashion. And those charges were often nothing more than hysteria. Some men fell as well. There are aspects of the hashtag MeToo movement that could be called sexual McCarthyism or sexual lynching, and they should not go unmentioned. From the standpoint of counterintelligence, the use of women as operatives is something that has gone on for a long time. The Gestapo had an actual brothel called Salon Kitty, in which the women would cajole their male customers, their Johns, to tell various political secrets, and it became a rich source not only of raw intelligence, but also for persecution and blackmail. The lack of critical evaluation of the hashtag MeToo movement in certain quarters has opened up, I think, or further developed a very potent and potentially useful intelligence technique for destroying a targeted individual. First, infiltrate a woman into the entourage or professional environment of a male politician, media, or business figure that is targeted for destruction. Have her gain the trust of her political target and his associates, bearing in mind that the cardinal rule for a good double agent is, quote, make yourself indispensable to the effort, unquote. Then, after a sufficient passage of time, surface the allegations of sexual harassment. If the opportunity for actual sex play and or flirtation presents itself, take advantage of it for later use as political or rhetorical ammunition. And again, with accusers, many of them anyway having the tactical luxury of remaining anonymous, this is an almost indefensible gambit. And, the proper vetting of the accusations when the accuser can remain anonymous is simply impossible. And again, bear in mind that for a public figure in the U.S., under American law, defamation law, it is almost impossible to defend against that. In the case of Al Franken, again, the picture of Al Franken ostensibly groping Leanne Tweeden's breasts while she's wearing a flak jacket is very obviously in jest. If you look at his the expression on his face, and with a photographer present, this was not a serious exercise in sexual harassment, any more than Leanne Tweeden grabbing the butt of a C&W performer was an actual instance of sexual harassment, or the skit between Al Franken and Leanne Tweeden, where he's holding up a skimpy undergarment and she is mugging off to her left in front of the camera. I would note that in addition to the narrow Republican margin in the Senate, they have a margin of two senators. Al Franken would have long been a target of the political right. He published a book called Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them in 2003. It was published in hardcover by Dutton. And he noted something that in and of itself would have gotten him, would have made him a target of the far right. In talking about where the malicious tone in American politics came from, he spoke of an incident in 1981 when the billionaire financier Richard Mellon Scaife, a member of the storied and powerful Mellon family and the main backer of right-wing causes, he fielded a reporter's question about his financial backing of those conservative groups. It was a woman named Karen Rothmeyer, R-O-T-H-M-Y-E-R, of the Columbia Journalism Review. Al Franken wrote about this, and I'm going to have to attenuate this because we are on the air. You effing communist C-word, and it is not attenuated in print. Get out of here, he said to Karen Rothmeyer of the Columbia Journalism Review. He went on to tell her that she was ugly and that her teeth were terrible. Of Ms. Rothmeyer's mother, who was not present, he said, she's ugly too. Sensing that it was time to wrap up the interview, Ms. Rothmeyer thanked Scaife for his time. He bade her farewell with a cheery, don't look behind you. And in this exchange later on, Al Franken, who was a comedian, says, that's the thing about tone. It's so subjective. personally, I've always found it was enough to say, you effing communist C-word. And he's not being serious. He is kidding around. Obviously, this is a vile, vulgar attack on Ms. Rothmeier. Again, of the prestigious Columbia Journalism Review, that in and of itself would have gotten, would have placed Al Franken in the political crosshairs, in addition to the right-wing connections of Leanne Tweeden. And I would note that almost a decade passed between this fateful USO tour and Ms. Tweeden's surfacing of the allegations about Al Franken. And in the present political climate, if Leanne Tweeden had charged Al Franken with having turned her into a South American tree frog, Al Franken would have had to say, I apologize for having turned Leanne Tweeden into a South American tree frog. Among the reasons I am talking about this is I don't think we are going to see much intelligent criticism of the excessive aspects of, again, not feminism, but weaponized feminism here. Political comedian Mort Saul hit the nail on the head decades ago when he observed that liberals' idea of courage is eating at a restaurant that hasn't been reviewed yet. I don't expect liberals to go against the grain on this one. Note, too, that Julian Assange, who is as far to the right as you can get, he is not a progressive at all, he has been charged with rape. And yet, we're not supposed to believe those women to hear the so-called progressive sector talk about it. In addition to Leanne Tweeden's right-wing links, the next accuser of Al Franken to come forward was a woman named Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-A-Y, Menz, M-E-N-Z, from the Heavy.com blog of November 20th of 2017, an article by Chris Bucher, or Bucher, B-U-C-H-E-R. Lindsay Menz, Senator Al Franken accuser, five facts you need to know. Menz's accusations against Franken are the first to surface from while he was in office. Menz told CNN that the incident took place at the 2010, that's 7 years prior, Minnesota State Fair. She reached out to CNN after the first accusations were made against Franken, calling his conduct, quote, uncomfortable, adding that it left her feeling gross, unquote. Menz said she was at the fair with her father, whose small company was sponsoring a radio booth, skipping down. Franken was one of the politicians to walk into the booth, and Menz said she and her husband recognized the former Saturday Night Live cast member immediately. As they prepared for the photos, Franken pulled her in really close, like awkward close, as her husband was taking the picture. In other words, this was taking place with her husband and her father present. Again, I am skeptical that this actually took place. Among the reasons, skipping down, Menz said that her and husband Jeremy voted for Donald Trump during the 2016 presidential election. And again, I'm very skeptical about this. One of the reasons why I passed the point, it's not that I choose to look askance at a lot of this, but it is impossible for me past a point to take too much of this seriously with an overtly vile and celebratory sexual predatory candidate, namely Donald Trump, running. 52% of white American women who voted for Donald Trump. 68% of white women in Alabama voted for DeRoy Moore. And in addition to all of the statements that Trump made about grabbing women by the P-word and so forth, on stage at the Republican convention, he was introduced by his daughter Ivanka. And he walked out on stage and just overtly sexually ogled her and then reached out and grabbed her by the upper part of her rear end. And there was no mainstream media discussion of this for all intents and purposes. I came across it quite by accident. And certainly the hashtag MeToo movement has not mentioned that Donald manifested grotesquely inappropriate behavior in front of his daughter, or vis-a-vis his daughter, not in front of her. There was a linked photograph of Ivanka at the age of 15 sitting on Donald Trump's lap at the Beach Boys concert. And presumably, they were not sitting motionless as in a Matthew Brady Civil War era photograph, but doing what people generally do at a rock concert, which is moving and grooving. I'm digging those good vibrations. She's giving me excitations. And yet, that really, there was some internet chatter, but that has escaped the hashtag MeToo movement. Now, one of the things that is worth noting is that much of the momentum, one of the things that is dangerous about the superficial and shallow, superficial nature of our internet culture and our social media culture, 140 characters in search of an author, is that an awful lot of what takes place on the internet is being done by bots. From Newsweek magazine, now, by the way, no longer part of the Graham publishing empire, actually owned by a former member of the Unification Church, an article by Nina Burley, B-U-R-L-E-I-G-H, from Newsweek of February 19th of 2018, how an alt-right bot network took down Al Franken. White nationalist provocateur, a pair of fake news sites, an army of Twitter bots, and other cyber tricks helped derail Democratic Senator Al Franken last year, new research shows. While everyone has been focused on Russian meddling, should be alleged Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election to support Donald Trump, the Franken takedown originated in and was propelled by a strategic online campaign with digital tentacles reaching to, of all places, Japan. Analysts have mapped out how Hoosier's pinup girl and Lad Mag model Leanne Tweeden's initial accusation against Franken became effective propaganda after right-wing black ops master Roger Stone first hinted at the allegation. A pair of Japan-based websites created the day before Tweeden came forward, and a swarm of related Twitter bots made the Tweeden story go viral and then weaponized a liberal writer's criticism of Franken. The bot army, in tandem with prominent real-life members of the far right who have Twitter followers in the millions, such as Mike Cernovich, who helped take down, by the way, John Conyers, spewed thousands of posts helping the hashtag FrankenFondles, hashtag and the Franken is a groper meme, effectively silenced the testimonies of 8 former female staffers who defended the Minnesota Democrat before he resigned last year. The operation commenced on November 15th when Stone, who is now banned from Twitter for racism and profanity, tweeted from one of his accounts, quote, "Roger Stone says it's Al Franken's time in the barrel," unquote. Franken next in long list of Democrats accused of grabby behavior, unquote. On the same day, a developer named Atsufumi Otsuka registered a web domain in Japan called Real USA Site, and a fake news website soon emerged at that web address, according to research shared with the voting rights outfit Unhack the Vote. Tweeden's account of Franken groping her was first amplified by a network of right-wing media, including KABC in Los Angeles, where Tweeden has a radio show, The Hill, InfoWars of Alex Jones, and Breitbart, which mobilized within hours of Stone's tweet and the release of a picture of Tweeden and Franken at a USO performance before he was a senator. 5 days later, on November 20th, right-wing provocateur Charles Johnson tweeted, "Thinking of offering money to people who go on TV and say Al Franken is a predator." That same day, Otsuka registered a second domain in Japan for another fake news site, Voti US Me. Both accounts use the same Google Analytics account ID and Apple App ID, and the name of the servers and registration for both sites were virtually identical. On December 7th, just before Democrats started calling, researchers filed, I should say, that last sentence again. That same day, Otsuka registered a second domain in Japan for another fake news site, Voti US Me. Both accounts used the same Google Analytics account ID and Apple App ID, and the name of the servers and registration for both sites were virtually identical, researchers found. On December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, just before Democrats started calling for Franken to step down, the freshly minted Japan-based fake sites went to work and republished an article by Ijeoma Oluo, a liberal writer, urging women and activists to stop supporting Franken. Oluo, O-L-U-O, had posted the opinion piece titled, "Dear Al Franken, I'll miss you, but you can't matter anymore," on a smaller website with a reach of 10,000 followers. Suddenly, thousands of apparently fake Twitter accounts were tweeting the title of the article, but linking back to one of the two Japanese-registered fake news sites created in conjunction with the right-wing anti-Franken campaign. The bot accounts normally tweeted about celebrities, Bitcoin, and sports, but on that day they were mobilized against Al Franken. Researchers have found that each bot account had between 30 and 60 followers, all Japanese. We began to suspect that this legitimate opinion piece by Oluo had been weaponized for political gain by dozens of Twitter accounts, all of them repeatedly tweeting links to the two domains registered in Japan in late November, on Hack the Vote's Mike Forb wrote in Medium. Strong similarities between the accounts, combined with clear connection to the two recently established Japanese websites, verified our suspicions. Soon, Forb and company realized that they had stumbled upon a sophisticated botnet being used to spread alt-right propaganda. The researcher who discovered the botnet has nicknamed it the Voti botnet, and it is still alive today, although currently not operating in service of any political propaganda. The researchers estimate that more than 400 accounts are in the botnet, although at any given time only a subset are being deployed in the online American political wars. I will fully cover the legal expenses of any victim of a congressman who wants to come forward to tell her story. Break the secrecy. Unseal the deals. Mike Cernovich, November 21st, 2017. That a quote, of course, from Mike Cernovich. The botnet has been spreading propaganda for over 2 months now, according to the researchers, and Twitter is aware of it and has not stopped it. We know this because Twitter has suspended some spam accounts that follow our Voti bots, the researcher told Newsweek. This shows that Twitter is aware that these followers' accounts are not legitimate. But if you look at the who to follow suggestion window when you're on a Voti bot account, the suggestions are almost always other Voti Twitter bot accounts. One question remains. Who is paying for this operation? The researchers believe that the operation was expensive. Indeed. And we obviously have a lot more material to cover. I'm going to recap aspects of the Twitter bot takedown of Al Franken. And again, this highlights the danger of a hashtag MeToo movement with the superficiality and with the technocratic fascist capabilities of bots. And we're also going to talk about the Harvey Weinstein case and a number of interesting overlaps with other political phenomena. However, that is going to have to take place in our next program. This concludes For the Record program 998. In politics, nothing happens by accident. Weaponized feminism and the hashtag MeToo movement. This is being recorded on February 27th of the year 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.